John Cody is trying to get in. Okay? So did everybody get a copy of the agenda? Yes. Okay. So there's one statement on the agenda that says that we're going to, please let the public feel free to ask questions of the applicants that we are reviewing for that night. And the questioning will stop when the public hearing closes. Okay? So the first thing on our meeting, we'll bring the meeting, we want to welcome our new and seventh board member, and that's Mr. Dustin Duncan. How are you? Say
great,
hi.
Thank you. Well, great, thank you, everybody.
Welcome. Thank you. Most exciting in Hudson. Okay, the most informative and the most exciting. Okay, we welcome you. And if you have any questions, you see, you know who Victoria is, right? She sent you.
I do. She sent me an email this morning. Yeah, yeah. And I'm digging through it now. Thank you for that.
You know who I am, Clark. Introduce yourself.
Clark Wieman. I happen to have the honor of, I guess, being the longest standing member now. It doesn't seem like it's been that long, but Laura Margolis just left. She was on the board for, I think, 13 years, 18 years, something crazy. Oh, so I guess in the last year of my second three-year term, have a background in planning and development and very much enjoy this board. I think we've been really great and welcome aboard. We're very happy to have you. And, you know, I trust that our great camaraderie will continue and good work. So, thanks for your public service.
Absolutely.
Linda? That's Linda. That's the board secretary. And Valerie, another board member.
Hi, Dustin. Nice to meet you. So I am probably the newest member before you. So I've been on the board for about 3 months now. So welcome aboard.
And we have Gene, but he's having a problem with the video tonight.
I'm here, but I'm having a problem with the video. I'm trying to get on, but welcome aboard and looking forward to work with you. Be ready.
Thank you. I look forward to working with you as well.
Larry is not here today. And John, you having a problem with video also?
Yes, John.
Down at the bottom.
Here, but muted.
John? Oh, okay. Okay. Well, you have John Cody.
All right.
Oh, there you go. John.
I got 14 pop-ups going through that stuff. So, and I didn't have a live link on the email. So I got it.
Okay. That's John Meet Duncan, our seventh member. And Duncan Meet John.
Hi, Duncan. How are you?
All right. Okay, so now we're going to go to old business, which is, now I wasn't here last week, and I want to thank you all for just having a wonderful meeting without me. So we left off at 402, 406 Warren Street. Victoria, what are we doing with that tonight?
So at the last meeting, the board authorized circulation under CECRA.
Okay.
We should ask the applicant to confirm that circulation has occurred. We give them the list of people to send it to, and they're going to provide us with an affirmation indicating that they sent the packages out. But they are here tonight to present some revisions to the plans that you've seen.
Okay. So are they ready? Who's that? Andy?
Yeah, good evening, everyone. I'm joined by Dan Hubble this week. Unfortunately, Charlie had a conflict, but Dan is here filling in, and he can give updates on the circulation and lead us through the presentation. I'm sure you all saw the supplemental materials that we submitted, and we have our consulting team here to walk through all of that. So I'll turn it over to Dan.
Okay, before you do, Dan, I want to get something out before I forget. Do we have the proper contact information for escrow? When we need the escrow payments, do we have the right name, telephone number, email address? Who is the contact person?
I think so. To me and also my colleague ZQ. You should have contact information for us both, but I can send an email to you after with both of our emails.
Right, please do, for okay. For escrow, okay?
Sure.
All right, thank you. Okay, go ahead with the presentation.
Yeah, good evening, Dan Hubble, Whiteman, Osterman, and Hannah. Apologize, I'm in my car. I drove to City Hall thinking that we were going to be in person tonight, and I was wrong. So got all dressed up for you. Anyways, happy to be with you tonight to talk to you about this project. I think that there's, you know, essentially three goals that we have to accomplish this evening. One is to kind of walk you through our submission that we did in February, which updates what we provided to you earlier. Field any questions that you may have. I can confirm, and we'll give you an affidavit that we did circulate the notice of intent to serve as lead agency that went out on the 4th of March. And so we'll provide that to you. We'll provide the affidavit to you. But essentially, tonight is to walk you through, have the architect engineer walk you through some of the studies that we've gotten done on the property. I know that there's been some questions in regards to traffic, parking, as well as noise. And in the materials that we submitted to you in February, there's an expanded EAF narrative that discusses in depth each of the potential environmental impacts. Secondly, what we want to do is we'd like to move forward with getting a county referral under GML 239. And then I think the third thing we're hoping to accomplish tonight is to get some agreement on the planning board hiring an engineer to review our plans and provide comments to you and recommendations to you. So with that, I think what probably makes the most sense is for me to turn over to our architect to kind of talk to you through some of the renderings and other materials that were submitted to you in February.
Good evening. My name is Don Petrancola with LMV Architects. Shall I share my screen? Is that acceptable? Okay. Okay, so a quick overview on some of the application documents that were submitted. This is the first floor plan. We're dealing with two existing historic buildings at Warren and North 4th Street. This is the 406 Warren Street building. This is the one along North 4th that are pre-existing. We're infilling the property to create a 30-room hotel. We have submitted and received comments from SHPO, and we've incorporated some of those in the updated submission. Just to orient you, this is Warren Street here. This is where we'll have our commercial entry into the hotel facilities, dining, restaurant. There's a bar, the other hotel retail facility here. The primary entrance into the hotel function is off of 4th here. And along Prison Alley on the back is essentially service and egress. From SHPO, they had asked for a kind of a simplification of both the plan and elevations to a certain degree. We want our additions to utilize materials and scale that you know, contrasts with the existing material, existing buildings, so that they highlight those historic buildings. So we differentiate those both in plan and in elevation. So you see that the entrance here is stepped a few feet back from where it connects between those two buildings. I'm going to jump to the elevations. What we've provided here is a little more detailed information for you than what you had prior. Mm-hmm. What we've got in here is an in-depth keynotes on materials. That's in your lower left corner, where we've identified all the different types of materials that we're dealing with. Obviously, the existing brick on the historic buildings is to remain and be repaired, as well as their cornices. The legend calls out hardy board, the trim, stucco, the windows. We've also got towards the bottom a material colors legend, though we're trying to stay within a light gray and light tan and whites color palette. We have selected specific colors all within the Benjamin Moore historic color palette. So this identifies each of these elevations are so keynoted and identified. Along Warren Street, we're rebuilding the storefront to the building here. The bar addition is to the right of the building. As you come around the corner to North 4th, this is the entrance to the hotel itself. These are the historic row houses, which we will reconstruct to their original facade to the best degree possible. The next sheet shows...
Can I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
Go down. Go to the Warren Street figure. Warren?
Yes.
Okay. See the steps on the side?
Are those
steps? Where do they go?
This is the reconstruction of the steps that are on the North 4th Street row houses.
And
they're way in the back.
Oh, they're way in, they don't belong there.
No, they're down here. So you're seeing that down the street. And when you see the site plan, if we jump back to the plan, you'll see that these are
okay,
down
here.
Yeah, you're looking at this facade, but those are way down the street.
Okay. Look like they were on the corner.
Yep. Yeah, so elevations are a little misleading. Nobody ever sees a building flat on, perfectly straight. So we've identified a great deal of information. We've called out all the materials, the windows, and all the colors. And hopefully there's a adequate information for you here. We've identified some of the cornice reconstruction, where we're going to be doing new cornices, and have provided some detail on that as well. So I think we feel we've got a fairly complete design intent here for your reaction and subsequent submission to the Historic Preservation Commission. So with that, I'm going to turn it over, unless anyone has any questions on the elevational architecture. We'll turn it over. Yes.
Sorry, have you submitted to Historic Preservation already, or is that coming
up? Not yet. Not yet. We felt the best process would be to start with your board for initial reaction, and then we will be submitting within the next month or so to Historic.
Great. And I guess here's my question / initial reaction. I mean, the middle piece that you're adding between the two historic buildings, I'm no architect or historic architect, but that seems to be wanting to look historic, but still contrasting with the other two historic buildings, I understand. General architectural philosophy of not necessarily trying to replicate historic buildings but making it stand out, but it just seems to me a completely different architectural look than the other two original structures. So maybe you can speak to that a bit. It again, just me as a non-architect but someone interested in good design, it seems like it's sort of out of place and doesn't fit well with the other two structures.
Understood. Let me give you a little feedback of what we received from Shippo's review, as well as the rationale to the need for this building a connector to be taller. Shippo felt that this connection was a little too ornate, so we've simplified the cornice, we simplified the windows, we simplified the window headers, really kind of pulled that down, went with a simple gray, a stucco material there. And it is, you know, that's 2 feet, 3 feet step back. The reason that we have the mansard roof up on the top, the other thing that they didn't like was a very ornate dormer, which if you might recall from last month, had a much more a sculptural dormer on the top. So we stepped that back to match the dormers on the row houses. But the reason for this, why this has a taller volume, is we have an elevator in this building. And the elevator goes to the third floor, and the elevator is required to have an overrun. And that's fairly close to the facade. And we really didn't want a modern look of a penthouse structure sticking up out of the building. We wanted to kind of keep that inside a roof volume. Let me jump back to the plan. So the elevator's right here, right, you know, that close, and it needs to be, you know, have that 5 or 6 foot overrun from the top of the ceiling of the third floor. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to keep that enclosed in a roof volume, and that's why serviceable, you know, as to why that building volumetrically is taller.
Okay. Okay. I mean, that's helpful.
Yeah. We thought it would look a little, we thought it would look funny, quite frankly, if we had a, you know, some kind of a box penthouse sticking up out of the roof. North Fourth is narrow enough, but the walking view down Warren opens up enough that you would see it from a distance before you crossed North Fourth. So we wanted to try and keep it enclosed.
And in January, a member of the public had asked a question. I don't know if this is the right time to ask it, but about where are you placing your air conditioner units and stuff on the roof?
Yes, and we also received some questions regarding the noise in association with that. So we've provided you, I believe, with an engineer's report on that. The HVAC systems proposed for the hotel are going to be ductless central heat pump systems. There are several outdoor heat pumps that are connected to indoor air handling units. Those will be on the roof, but beyond the facade. You won't see it. It's actually internal. We're specifying Mitsubishi R2 Hyperheat product lines. I don't expect you to know what those are. I don't really know what they are, but they are one of the most energy efficient and the quietest product that is on the market today. The noisiest of the outdoor units will have a sound power rating of 68 decibels maximum. That's taken from 3 feet from the unit when it is running at full speed, mm-hmm. Which is going to be very rarely. That'll only run on full speed at the very hottest and the very coldest of the days. In the spring and the fall, when the hotel will require heating in some rooms and cooling in others, the outdoor units will not run at all. But we've calculated the closest house to those outdoor units is across Prison Alley, and it's approximately 30 feet from the units. So the noise level of those units maximum to that house is 48 decibels. 60 decibels is considered normal conversation levels. 70 decibels is street traffic or a vacuum cleaner. 40 decibels is considered to be a quiet library. So these outdoor units will not create a noise trespass issue for neighboring properties.
Okay, I'm glad you took care of that. I'm sorry.
All right, Rod, are you good to jump into site? I'll stop sharing.
Sure, yep. Everyone, hi, Rod Morrison from the LRC Group. We're the civil engineers and landscape architect working with the rest of the team here.
Enjoy it.
If I can share a screen as well, let me jump over to it. Well, that doesn't help you. I have a couple of images up, just one, because our work here, there's very little to do in terms of scope outside of the building, but it's really important, and it's going to look really, really good when we're done. This is just a photo of North 4th Street, our side of the street, which is really in a great state of disrepair. The opposite side, the western side, has been rebuilt with very nice building construction and lighting and so on. Let me jump over to, we created a somewhat of a colored site plan to show you what our work would be to go along with Don's and the architectural team. Again, North 4th here, the section of Hudson Public, which we were just talking about, is in the middle in this location. So we've created an entry that is accessible entry with a step in, a walk in from North 4th, really proposing the reconstruction of this entire side of North 4th to be a matching concrete surface grid pattern to be similar to Warren Street. Also, as we extend around Warren Street, some of our construction will cause us to need to repair, replace concrete panels through here as well. So you can see that further down, closer to Prison Alley, we have the steps that Don was discussing, the reconstructed historic steps to those units. We've tried to complement the side with really it would support three street trees in here. I'm not the landscape architect, I'm the engineering side, but these trees are intended to match up with the other plantings elsewhere, both on Warren and on the other side of the intersection. So essentially our work is really quite limited to this location through here. The other thing I want to mention, because it ends up in our work, but it's very much an architectural element as well, is the lighting. Warren Street has perfectly adequate street lighting. On the other side of North 4th, this reconstructed building over here, I was showing you, has some gooseneck and all building mounted lighting. So what we're proposing through Warren Street and also in North 4th is a combination of these two light fixtures. The larger circular fixture would be at the new entrance to the Hudson Public, and the other wall-mounted fixture, which sits closer to the building, would be an infill in between those. Those would be largely on North 4th Street, where the more prominent entrances on Lawrence Street would all have this more substantial fixture. I mean, in addition to that, the tree plantings would have the typical matching tree wells. And anywhere here in Warren Street where we ended up needing to, like I said, repair or infill, we'd be matching that concrete grid pattern and really reestablishing the nice sidewalk presence down to the intersection, and then extending that for quite a tremendous improvement along North 4th out to Prison Alley. I think in the scope of our element, again, there is a walkway out of the building out to Prison Alley. That's been all made accessible. Our element is a little bit limited. If there are any questions about that, happy to take them. If not, I think we're all interested in hearing a little bit about traffic. Mark DeDolny is on the line with us, and I will stop my screen share and turn it over to him. Mark?
Hello, Mark DeDolny, Creighton Manning Engineering. I'm just going to walk you through the traffic and parking assessment that we had conducted so far for the project. As noted earlier, it's a 30-room hotel, so we had to determine how much traffic and how much parking a 30-room hotel would require. And so one of the first things that we ended up doing at the request of the planning board was going out and looking at traffic, existing traffic at the adjacent signalized intersection of 4th Street and Warren Street. We went out and we counted traffic during the AM, PM, and Saturday peak hours. Those are the sort of worst-case trip-generating hours of the hotel. And of the adjacent street. And so once we had that existing picture of what the intersection currently operates, we counted vehicles, pedestrians, and bikes. We wanted to know, okay, what happens in the future when we start to add additional traffic associated with the hotel to that adjacent signalized intersection? We anticipate the hotel loading from 4th Street. So most of that, and since 4th Street is one-way northbound roadway, all the traffic would be heading sort of through that adjacent signalized intersection. We went and looked at how much a typical hotel with 30 rooms generates, how much traffic it generates. And during the morning, it's approximately 14 peak hour trips. During the afternoon, it's approximately 18. And during the Saturday peak hours, about 27. So that's like, you know, seven in and seven out in the morning. That's sort of entering and exiting as well. So once we have an idea of how much traffic, additional traffic is going to go through that signalized intersection, we then look to see what sort of impact those additional trips will have on the delay of existing vehicles. And right now that intersection is a pretty timed traffic signal. However, it's operating fairly well. It's the levels of service are B or better out there. And the additional traffic is not very high. The additional traffic of 14 to 18 to 27 vehicles during those peak hours is not going to have a great impact on the typical delay at that intersection. We're looking at about a 1 second increase in delay. So overall vehicular delay at the intersection is not going to increase a lot. The other thing we looked at was pedestrian accommodations. We did go back and look at the City of Hudson's comprehensive plan that was adopted back in 2002. Within that plan, there was a more general goal of providing improved pedestrian accommodations within the city, and they actually identified this intersection as one that could be improved. At that time, there were no real pedestrian accommodations at the intersection. But since the comprehensive plan had been completed and adopted, the high visibility crosswalks that have been installed by the city and the ADA compliant ramps are now there. So there has been some pedestrian improvements at that intersection since the adoption of the comprehensive plan. As I noted, that is a pre-timed traffic signal. There are no pedestrian buttons or countdown timers. And it's an older signal, so you really can't add that type of accommodation without completely replacing the signal. So since, you know, the signal is operating adequately now, we would recommend that pedestrian crossings be supplemented with signs that say that inform pedestrians to wait for their green in order to cross the street when the parallel traffic is going. It's a typical MUTCD sign that can be provided on those signal poles to accommodate and inform pedestrians when to cross. The next thing we did was a parking assessment. And the first thing we wanted to do was determine how much demand a 30-room hotel would require during its worst case peak. And that worst case peak occurs at night when everyone's, you know, asleep. And over the course of the day, people are going to and from their events. They check in, but then they typically go to some sort of an event, that the reason why they're in the city of Hudson. So the parking during the day is not as heavy as it is over the course of the night. So since the city of Hudson is a little different than your typical suburban hotel location, we went and we observed parking conditions at the Wick Hotel, because that does have the added benefit of the Amtrak station located nearby. There's, you know, obviously there's transit in the area. So we wanted to determine how much parking does the Wick Hotel require. And based on those observations, the Wick Hotel, we determined a rate of how many rooms that the Wick Hotel has. We can apply that rate for parking to the proposed site. And based on that rate, we would anticipate the site would need about 25 parking spaces overnight. So what did we do then? So then we needed to look at supply in the area. How much available on-street parking is there? Well, you've got free on-street parking, you've got meter parking, and then you've got some municipal lots in the area. So we went out during winter conditions. As you know, in the city of Hudson, over the winter, there's alternate side parking, which is your worst case condition. You know, during the summertime, you can park on both sides of the street, so there's, you know, more than enough parking in the summer to accommodate traffic in the area. But in the winter, on-street parking is limited because you have that alternate side parking restriction. We went out on an even and an odd day and observed parking from 10 o'clock at night to midnight to see what sort of parking demand, supply and demand is within an approximate quarter mile radius to the hotel. Now, that radius is about a 5-minute walk to the hotel. That's called a typical pedestrian shed of what pedestrians are comfortable walking to a destination. And that's used in our industry as a sort of a radius for acceptable parking locations. So now within that pedestrian shed, we do acknowledge that it does overlap a little bit with the pedestrian sheds of some of the other projects that have been brought before the board, mainly the Depot District, the Pocketbook Factory, and the Hudson House Hotel. So in order to try to limit any sort of overlap with those projects, we actually didn't even consider those streets as potential parking for the hotel. It was a couple of half blocks to the east. So we didn't even include that in our potential supply for the proposed project. Now, without alternate side parking in effect, there are over 600 available on-street parking spaces within that quarter mile pedestrian shed. However, when you have on-street parking or alternate side parking in effect, that reduces your free parking to about 370 on-street parking spaces on either side of the road for your odd and even days. There's also metered parking spaces out there that become free overnight. And during those odd and even days, there's approximately 80 metered spaces that can be applied to your sort of supply within that quarter mile pedestrian shed. Now, when we went out and observed parking conditions overnight, during these odd and even days, we observed approximately 211 to 226 vehicles parked on the street. Now, that is in contrast to approximately 450 available spaces. So in terms of parking occupancy, within about a quarter mile of the hotel, the proposed hotel, we're at about a 50% occupancy rate right now. And if you heard what I said earlier, the hotel needs about 25 parking spaces. So you've got a surplus of about 200 in the immediate area of that hotel within a 5-minute walking radius to accommodate those 25 spaces. Now, if we add those 25 spaces to the demand in the area, the parking occupancy gets reduced down to about 56%. So I know some of the board members were here when we were talking about some of these other projects, but your review engineer has said that parking occupancy shouldn't be greater than 85% to 95% in order to have a comfortable amount of available parking. And that, now after development of the site, we're going to be at about 56%. So we're below that sort of upper threshold. One other thing we did look at was the loading zone near the hotel on 4th Street. Now, 4th Street has parking on both sides of the street, and we are recommending that some or all of the parking on 4th Street between Warren and Prison Alley be eliminated in front of the hotel to provide that loading area for patrons of the hotel. And that will allow people to travel northbound on 4th Street, unload, and then go find parking in the surrounding area. And it's also noted that there is a municipal lot on Warren Street just to the west. There's about 23 parking spaces in that municipal lot. When we observed it, there was about 10 to 13 occupied. So again, even within that municipal lot, there was about 10 to 13 available parking spaces on those odd and even days. So that's a sort of a summary of the parking and the traffic assessment that we had done for the site. And we can obviously provide more detail as we move forward through the approval process and through the public comment process as well. I see there is a question, I think, from Margaret Morris. I'm not sure if we want to be taking questions. That's up to the board.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, board member Duncan had his hand up first.
He did? Okay, Duncan first, and then we'll take Margaret.
I just said thank you, Mark. I appreciate you sharing the modeling results for the parking and the traffic estimates. But I may have missed some key points in by the inputs of the algorithm. And so my question was about, did you account for bar activity? So you mentioned different aspects of the hotel, and you mentioned there would be a bar there too. But it sounded like that the estimates were only based on the hotel guests in terms of parking, as well as traffic, but not necessarily bar activity. So you can clarify if that was included in your algorithm as well.
That'll be helpful. So the parking estimates, the worst case parking for the hotel is, you know, at night, you know, around midnight. So generally the bar is not requiring parking at that time. So the overlap of the bar and the hotel, when the bar has worst case parking and the hotel is a worst case parking, they don't necessarily overlap. So I don't believe the WIC has a bar component to it, which would be included in those rates as well. But since they don't overlap, I guess we don't have a sort of an earlier part of the day of when the bar is more busy and when the hotel is requires less parking.
And just to clarify, the traffic estimates and the parking estimates don't account for bar activity?
Correct.
So the trip generation estimate for a hotel does include restaurant and bar use. Okay. So those are sort of baked into hotels because they typically have those types of uses in there. So that is in there. The rate for the WIC, does it have a large restaurant or bar in there? I don't believe it does. I did look at your standard parking rates for a hotel, which would have hotel, restaurant and bar type uses in there. And they were actually pretty similar to the WIC. So there wasn't that much of savings associated with the Amtrak station that we may have thought that people were using the Amtrak station and taking some sort of ride share over to the WIC. So there, if there is a bar parking demand really late at night, it's not going to, it's not going to exceed the amount of available supply in the area. There is quite a bit of supply in the area, during those worst case conditions overnight.
Thank you.
I think that we can also add that the bar is 300 square feet total, including the bar. So we're not fitting a lot of people a lot of people in there. The dining room as well is only 750 square feet.
Right. My understanding was that was more to supplement the guests than to attract, you know, large crowds to come to the bar. It's more for a, you know, amenity for the hotel.
Okay, we're going to hear from Margaret Morris.
Yeah. Hi. Member of the public here. First of all, I think the odd even rules apply throughout the year, not part of the year. Mm-hmm. I know on my street we have to do odd even throughout the year, so I'm not really sure where that was coming from. The other comment that I have is the lot that you're referring to on Warren Street, municipal lot. I have frequently tried to park there in the evening on Friday evening, Thursday, Friday evening, frequenting restaurants down in that part of Warren, and have not been able to find a spot. So I'm like confused as to the availability of parking that you seem to suggest is available in the area, because that has not been my experience as a resident of Hudson.
Now, was the, when you tried to get a parking space, was that at, you know, around midnight, or was that when you were trying to go to a restaurant?
I was trying to go to a restaurant. So are you saying that a guest at your hotel will be going out at midnight to find a parking space, or are they like more like a normal person hoping to park at 8 o'clock at night and go to your hotel and then stay there, or you're expecting your guests to go out at midnight and find a parking space? Because no, I don't actually go out at midnight to look for a parking space.
I guess the point is, when the hotel has the greatest amount of need would be around midnight, when all the guests are generally sleeping. So that's when the city of Hudson would need the most parking.
I'm sorry, sir. I would like to say to you that when I go to a hotel and Jesus. I park, I don't actually go out at midnight to find a place to park. I go out at 8 o'clock at night to park my car for the evening, and then I go to my hotel. So looking at what's available at midnight is not really what you need to be looking at. You need to be looking at when your guests are going to park for the night, which is not midnight. They're going to park for the night, maybe at 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock. That's when they're going to park. And at that time of night, in the area that you're talking about, that lot that you referred to on Warren Street near 4th is full. So you don't need to be looking at midnight. You need to be looking at 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, what's available. Because that's when I'm parking my car to go to my room.
Oh, Jesus.
That's just practical.
The lot that you were referring to, where is it again? Warren
Street? Yeah, so specifically...
What lot is that?
It's the one on Warren that's the place I go to on a regular basis. It's the Red Dot. It's just down from the Red Dot on Warren Street.
Oh, okay.
Right. River. And it's the one that this company was referring to as a municipal lot that at midnight has lots of spaces. Sure, they do, but at midnight, as a hotel guest, I'm not going out looking for spaces. I want to park at 6 or 7 at night, go to my room, wander around, go to a restaurant. I'm not going out at midnight to park my car.
Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you.
Hey, can I ask a question, too, about which lot we're talking about? Because there's a lot next to the Presbyterian Church, as well as the one down.
Right. You're right.
So to the company that's presenting here tonight, which lot are you actually talking about?
We're talking about this. Can you see this?
Yes.
So this is the hotel is. You've got the hotel here, and then the lot on Warren, just east of 3rd.
So it's near the church?
No, it's near to Steiner's.
No.
It's the one that I usually try to park at and don't succeed.
Well, again...
But it doesn't really matter what lot we're talking about. What I'm calling into question is wandering around at midnight and talking about what's available at midnight does not actually address the fact that your guests are going to want to park, not at midnight, but at 6 or 7 in the evening after they've checked in, and then go about their business, you know, going to restaurants and more or whatever. So I don't think looking at what's available at midnight is the correct approach. And that's all I have to say. I will stop.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay, we're going to let Valerie come in. What is the name here? Okay, we'll get right back to the public in a minute. Valerie?
I just have a question, too, just to piggyback on Margaret's. I mean, as a resident, board member, and a previous business owner on Warren Street, I do recognize those municipal lots do get full just on a regular basis. Like, literally, it doesn't matter what time of the day it is. There's nowhere to park. Like, I would be lucky if I can find one parking space. So my question to you all is, have you considered valet and perhaps purchasing spaces down by the train that you could utilize as your parking for guests?
Mark?
Well, we have not considered the, a valet to park close to the train, just because the assessment does show that regardless of that, that municipal lot is only 23 odd spaces. So, the assessment that we did showed that there was more than adequate on-street parking and metered parking that becomes free overnight to accommodate the hotel. So we're not saying we're relying on that municipal lot. We're just saying that it could supplement it. And the analysis was done between 10 and midnight. It was done between 10 and by 11:30. So it wasn't like we were out at there midnight to 6 in the morning. It was done a little earlier. And yes, it's not like the hotel requires no parking, earlier in the day, but the maximum is, past 10 o'clock when people are, I go to lots of hotels, and I agree sometimes you come back at 6, but sometimes I don't get back till 10:30, and that's when the maximum number of vehicles are required is, past 10 o'clock at night. But I agree that the hotel will require parking earlier in the day, just not as much as it does overnight.
Yeah, I definitely can see there being space at night. I'm just concerned that, Warren Hudson is a walking town, so a lot of people will get in town and want to drop their cars and walk around. So that's just, just a thought. Like, have you considered valet and maybe securing some spaces where you can put the guest cars? It's just a suggestion. And then my other question that I have is the loading zone. How many spaces, and I don't know if you mentioned it earlier, but how many spaces were you suggesting that would be, and are those spaces going to be dedicated? Are you suggesting that those spaces are for the hotel 24 hours or just during the busy parts of the day?
They wouldn't be parking spaces. It would be a loading zone. So it would be more of a drop your car off, maybe check in and then get back in your car and find a parking space. Now, the length of 4th Street between Warren and Prison Alley, you can accommodate approximately 5 vehicles there. The hotel probably does not need all 5 spaces, but then if you leave 1 or 2, are you going to now start to ask people to sort of parallel park into the loading zone? So it may be more advantageous just to leave the whole side available just to minimize any sort of friction with people pulling in and out, and maybe some blind spots of people trying to, make that exit the loading area. That's up for discussion with the city. If the board feels that 3 spots are enough and they want to leave, and you want to leave 2 on-street parking spaces to the north of the hotel, I mean, that's definitely something that I'm sure the applicant would be willing to discuss.
Okay, thank you. And in terms of the valet,
I mean, that's not something that they couldn't do in the future if they really found that, their guests were really struggling to find places to park. I mean, they could, that is a service that could be, I guess, implemented. But again, I'd have to leave that over to Dan to respond to that.
Okay.
Yeah, Dan Hubble here from Whiteman. So again, on the parking, I think this points to the reason why we think it would be beneficial for the board to engage an engineer or traffic consultant to kind of look at the work Mark has done, provide recommendations and suggestions to the board, essentially check his work. and confirm that his recommendations make sense.
Hey, D. Wayne, we're going to go to the public. Is it?
Hi, yes. Hi, thank you for letting me speak. My first, Mark, you mentioned like in winter time only, like about the parking. You said winter time there is only. I forgot what you mentioned, but it actually whole Hudson pretty much is odd even parking, and pretty much Hudson is lack of parking. Hudson has lack of parking, and you said like the loading unloading is going to be a truck unloading too, because it's a hotel. Obviously there's going to be truck unloading. So you have any thought about that truck unloading? And because of Maker, we have problem because when they deliver, a truck comes in to deliver, sometimes they block the whole road and alleyway. So what did you guys have any thought about that?
In terms of the truck loading, Rod, or do you know where that's going to occur, Dan? Is that going to be on Prison Alley?
Rod, could you give us a sense? I think it's an important question. Is Prison Alley the best location there, Rod?
I think it has to do operationally with the facility, with the hotel, all of it. But it would seem, if you could see this, I put this back up for context. Prison Alley does seem to be the right place to do that. And just in my time out on the property, it seems like that kind of activity goes on across the street as well. So I would imagine there may be some sort of pull up in front of the entrance for something quick. But in terms of supplies and such, I think the expectation, and Don, correct me if I'm wrong, but that activity would be coming in and out of our walkway access. Mm-hmm. More into this kitchen area. I believe the kitchen area is in here. So that would occur in the section of Prison Alley.
That's correct. Coming out of that's service, trash, kitchen, employee entrance.
Yeah.
Where is he? Dwayne, are you okay with that? Thank you.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. Thank you. Yeah.
Bill?
I'm just, before I make my comments, is Galvin done with their presentation?
No.
Okay, I'd like to wait till after they're done with the presentation to talk. Is that okay?
We're going to move on to the next issue. I think you should say about this presentation?
Yes, it is, but I'd like to hear the whole presentation so that in case there's something I want to comment on, and I hear, is that okay to do it after they're done?
Are you guys finished?
We've concluded our presentation for this evening.
Now I ask you a question. Excuse me, Margaret, could you put your hand down?
No, I still have a question.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I didn't know. Okay, Bill, go ahead.
So, this is just the wrong location for a 30-room hotel. It's pretty obvious, and most of it has, of course, has to do with parking. There's a few things that I can't believe I heard tonight. Mark Ndolny's offered us some sort of study, I guess, which I'd like to see. That's a question, actually. Is there an actual study that the public can see that you've done, Mark?
Yes.
And have you submitted it to the board?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
What I will say, though, just real quick, I'm going to resubmit it because I noticed that when we put the final study together, one of the tables is missing. So I'm going to resubmit that tomorrow. That'll have the table that was inadvertently left out.
So you've done a study, and it's a quarter mile radius, just like Galvin's project on 7th and State. What hotel guest is going to park 5 minutes from a hotel and walk back
and walk back to the car later on. That's just crazy to me. That's even part of the study. A minute, 2 minutes, maybe 3 minutes, I'll walk to my car if I go to a hotel, but I'm not walking 5 minutes. And it's just unrealistic, and it shouldn't be part of the study. Second thing that I heard that I can't believe, Mark Nadoli claims that in Hudson, during the summertime, there's no overnight parking rules in effect. This is false. Monday to Friday, they remain. Every year for the past few years, they have been suspended. The rules have been suspended overnight only on the weekends. What you said was false, Mark. The third thing that I heard that I cannot believe is that you're comparing the parking situation at the Wick Hotel to a potential hotel at the corner of 4th and Warren. I mean, the conditions aren't even close to one another. I don't see how you can make any comparison there, honestly. The other thing, if we want to make comparisons between hotels, let's look at the Maker. The Maker is an 11-room hotel. They have 12 private spaces across the alley from the back of their building. They don't have to worry about their guests, where they're going to park. They can park there for as long as they want, and the car is right around the corner. Okay? Now let's consider somebody who's coming to visit Galvin Hotel at 4th and Warren. A lot of people just want to park their car on Friday or Saturday or Thursday, whenever they arrive. They want to check into a hotel, and they want to enjoy Warren Street on foot. But since there's no on-site parking, a lot of people are going to have to park in metered parking spaces. Who wants to be at a hotel parked in a metered parking space and have to worry about filling the meter up every 2 hours or getting a $15 ticket? I mean, honestly, your study probably shows, oh, there's plenty of parking spaces. Half of them, at least, are metered spaces. This is just totally unrealistic. And the last thing I'd like to say is that what I just heard about trucks making deliveries in the alley. If there's a truck in that alley at the corner of 4th Street, it will completely block the alley. I know that alley, the end of that alley, or that intersection there.
There should be.
That's a very narrow alley. It's not wide at all. And there should be no trucks parking there unloading and completely blocking the alley. And I guess I imagine that the fire department had something to say about that, as well as the police department. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Bill. Okay. Okay, we'll go back to Margaret. Margaret.
Thank you. Most of what I wanted to say, I think Bill has said, but I do want to come back. The individual who is presenting the parking information, I'm sorry, I'm trying to find names here. Was that Mark?
Yes.
Yeah. So, Mark, I also travel a lot for work. And I stay in all kinds of hotels. And when I'm staying at a Hampton in the middle of nowhere, I come back at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, park in the lot, blah, blah, blah. When I'm staying in Philadelphia, New York City, any city location, I am coming in, parking my car when I arrive for my business meetings, and then I'm going to just leave it there and do my business and depart. So I think that when you imagine what a guest coming to Hudson is, what their experience is going to be, it's not going to be the Hampton experience of coming back at 10 o'clock at night and finding a spot. It's not also going to be the same thing, but not exactly the same thing as New York City or Philadelphia. It's not that extreme, but it's somewhere in the middle. And I think that you need to really think about who comes to Hudson? Why do they come to Hudson? They're not always going to be doing everything on foot. They're going to maybe want to go out, drive around in the Catskills. They maybe want to go to the Berkshires, etc. So some of that occurs. but I think that you need a slightly more nuanced approach to evaluating the parking. And looking at it at 10 o'clock at night doesn't really cut it for me.
Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go back to, we're going to go to Mr. Roney, and then we're going to stop the public because we have to move on. And if you have comments, you can write them in and we'll make sure that they get them, post them, and everything else. Okay, Mr. Roney? Ayla. Hello?
Thank you, Teresa. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Yeah. So I basically, you know, just want to reiterate some of the points that Dewan brought up. My colleague also, Margaret, basically pointed it out, and obviously Bill very vehemently pushed the same points. And it's really all to do with both the parking situation and to kind of maintain Hudson as a livable and walkable city. And that's, I think, it needs to be one of the priorities that the planning board looks at going forward, and obviously with this project as well. As a resident of Hudson that experiences the overflow parking from Warren Street every weekend, basically from sometimes starting on Wednesday until Sunday night, I have a very difficult time in my 200 block of Columbia Street finding parking for my vehicles. The nature of Hudson has moved to this point where there isn't many jobs within the city, which forces residents to look for jobs that are quite a bit of commute, which basically necessitates having multiple houses, multiple cars per household, which exacerbates the parking situation. So while Mark has presented some data, and I feel that some of the data is very outdated because of the changing nature of Hudson's demographic, as well as how, you know, how we are using cars in and outside of the city. My concern is basically, you know, reiterating what Margaret is saying. I think we need to go forward and think about how to maybe corral the cars in a centralized location that may not be within walking distance of the hotel, possibly the hotel offering shuttle services to a larger parking area, maybe in the downtown area where there are many parking areas, also the municipal lots. And I think that will go a long distance in trying to look forward and provide solutions. I don't want to just complain about it. I would like to try to offer, and that is, you know, one of the solutions that I would like to offer. The hotel look at either utilizing parking spaces and providing a shuttle method so that both patrons of the hotel and patrons of the bars are able to utilize parking that is not necessarily in the street, or taking up parking spaces for residents who are not going to be, you know, very happy with competing with hotel and bar guests 3 or 4 days out of the week. You know, I would look forward to seeing solutions presented that would take into account how we can maintain the city as a very walkable city, very livable city for residents as well as obviously visitors. This is not an attack on the existence of the hotel or the future of the hotel, but we want to make sure that it works with how we have a vision for this city as well as the residents that are currently living there. Thank you for your time.
We thank you. One of the board members, Valerie, did bring that point up, and it looks like it's something that we're going to be pushing forward. Okay, Duncan. Sorry, Mr. Bill.
I just have one quick suggestion based on the comments that I'm hearing. I think, Mark, what would be helpful, I'm not questioning the validity of the results or the comprehensive approach that it sounds like you've taken, but I think one thing that would be helpful, given that there's differential thoughts on when people would park, is a sensitivity analysis where you base different assumptions. And so I leave it, of course, to you to decide what those time parameters are. But I think that you probably should, I think what could be helpful is redoing the analysis, keeping the current time frame, but also using different time parameters, et cetera. So something that's a little bit earlier, I don't know, from, you know, normal check-in times from like 3 to 5, and then maybe a different parameter from 5 to 7, then something else maybe from 7 to 9, and then maybe something that's overall. And then it would be helpful to see the parking situation and the different parameters, especially parameters close to check-in time. And I would also match it with, you know, whatever the planned check-in, check-out times are. Thank you.
If I could follow up on that, Teresa, too, and thanks for that comment, Dustin. we had and have available a excellent parking consultant that we used on both Pocketbook Factory and the Galvin Project, the Depot District Galvin Project. So I know we had talked about engaging a consultant, but I feel like we worked successfully with them in the past. And to Dustin's point, we should have them engaged to assist in a variety of analysis. And again, I feel like it was successful in the previous projects, thinking through the parking options and coming up with a good solution.
Yes, and this is Dan from Whiteman. We agree with that, which is why we've encouraged the board to engage a parking consultant. I also want to gently remind everyone that there is no off-street parking requirement under the city code for this. And so that I know that's something that we dealt with on the North 7th Street project, and I think came to a solution that worked. I think getting the traffic consultant involved on this and someone else who speaks same language as Mark would certainly help.
Yes.
All right. Okay. Bill, if you can keep your comments no more than 2 minutes.
Just two things. Is this the last opportunity for the public to make comment on this project?
No. No, we don't. We're not even at the public hearing yet.
Oh, okay. I guess just one nice question, if Mark or somebody can answer, is how many on-road spaces, on-street spaces, either on Warren or on 4th, does this project require? How many spaces are you going to take over? You talked about two loading zone on 4th. What about anything on Warren, or is it just those two spaces, or possibly five you talked about?
The only spaces that we would talk about potentially eliminating would be on 4th.
Okay. And is that something that you have to get permission from the city for, or can you just take spaces? How does that work?
No, we would have to get the city's buy-in. I'm sure we'd have to loop in DPW and, yeah.
Okay.
Right. All they can do is suggest it. It would be up to, I'm not sure if it's the Common Council or the DPW. We'd have to look at the charter, but another city entity would have to provide for that closure. I think when we did the last project, it was Rob Perry who made that decision.
Right. Yeah. Rob was really involved the last time, and we would definitely run any recommendations past him once it got, the blessing of the board.
Okay, that's all
I have.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. So, Victoria, what do you suggest we move to?
So, I suggest tonight, it sounds like the board is interested in hiring a consultant to review the parking study and to advise. So, you can either, look around for consultants, or you can hire the same consultant that you did last time, which was Alta Engineering. So if you're comfortable with Alta, you could make a motion to hire Alta Engineering and request that the applicant establish an escrow in the amount of, whatever sum that is to cover the cost of that review.
Okay, they did establish an escrow of $10,000, right?
They did.
Yeah, okay, so we have money in their account.
And, okay.
I think we should look at consultants, but I think Clark would like to look at different consultants. I like to spread the wealth and the knowledge.
Yeah.
If you use the same people, you might get this. I just like using different people, bringing different eyes in.
Sure. And that makes sense. I guess my only thought is that there's obviously a lot of institutional knowledge and understanding of the city that we would have already paid for. So I think it would be.
Not the only ones. So,
So then you cannot hire someone tonight because we need, in order to hire someone, we need to know who you're hiring.
Right. So we can't hire. So who wants to be on that committee to look for a consultant? Duncan, Valerie, two new people.
Dustin.
I call him by his last name. He already told me to stop that, but I can't help myself. Reminds me of the donut. I'm sorry. So
no worries.
Okay. So Dustin and Valerie. Those are the two new. And who is one of the senior people that want to be with them?
I'll join.
Maybe Larry. Oh. What'd you say? Did you say you, Clark?
I'll join if, yeah. I'm okay.
So, yeah, yeah. I also have several friends.
Is that too many, Victoria? I'm
sorry.
Is that too many?
Three is not a quorum, so that is a good committee.
Okay. Perfect.
And you're going to be on the committee to look for a consultant. Because I think Valerie had a great suggestion that they should look into valet parking and they should look at that lot down by the train station.
Yeah, I feel like at least if people have an option, it's like, okay, park at your own risk. Like, I travel all the time for work as well. So it's like, if you want to park on the street, good luck. But at least there's options where, you know, you can bring your car and know that you're good. So, but happy to help with finding a consultant as well.
Yeah. Okay.
The next item that the applicant requested tonight was that we make a motion to refer the project to the Columbia County Planning Board. Dan Hubble, the applicant's attorney, and I were having a side discussion about what the trigger was for county review.
Mm-hmm.
But we can authorize it tonight, and if it turns out that there's no trigger for county review, then we don't have to send it. But at least we wouldn't have to wait another month to get that review going.
Okay.
It has to do with, does Route 9, when it enters the city and turns into a regular city road, is it still considered Route 9, you know, warranting county referral?
Well, I live on what they call Worth Avenue, and it's still Route 9, you know, so. Okay, so can I get a motion?
Mm-hmm. I saw Duncan raise his hand.
Sure, yeah.
I'll second. Okay, John Cody seconds. Okay.
Okay, so all in favor?
All in favor? Sorry.
Aye.
All righty. Okay, so we can thank you for your presentation and we can move on to the next item now on our agenda.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, so the next item on our agenda is going to be 702-704 Columbia Street. It's a site plan application for the owner, Savannah Hudson Properties, LLC, to renovate and expand the current use form from a two-family resident with one commercial space into a four-family dwelling with two commercial spaces. Are they here tonight?
I am. Andy Didio with Taconic Engineering. Good evening, everybody. I think best way to go about it is I'll jump right into the site plan and do a page turn. Everybody see my screen? So yes, it's 702-704 Columbia Street. So just to give you an orientation, this is the park here, Columbia Street and North 7th crossing. This is the existing condition plan, essentially the survey. So it's a three-story brick building. And I can actually probably pull this over too so that you can all see it.
Oh, is that one?
So yeah, it's this building. So there's the Citco Park, North 7th. So this is the building. You can see the front facade. And then just while I'm here, I may as well take you around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the back portion of the lot. You can see there's a portion of two-story, and then actually in the back here, there's a portion of single-story, and then the lot comes back to this kind of alley spur. There's that single story portion. So get rid of that. So that gives you a lay of land of the existing site, and you can see the two story, one story, three story, and then the extension of Long Alley.
Okay.
So the proposal is to renovate the building, obviously, and do a minor addition off of the back. What would occur is the portion of two story that's on the North 7th Street side would be extended, so the single story, existing single story would be elevated to be two story section. And then a single story addition off of the back of that, that would be just an expansion of what would be the proposed commercial spaces downstairs. In addition to that would be egress stairs. Again, as Teresa had mentioned, four residential spaces, two on the third floor, two on the second floor. And so egress stair out the back. A portion of that, so the building would be bisected internally. The North 7th Street side would be a restaurant space, and the owner currently doesn't have a tenant. Ultimately, she would look to kind of white box, quote unquote, the restaurant portion. So build out the kitchen, establish the cooler space, basically generate the space that a tenant could come in and outfit and operate as a restaurant space. As a portion of that would be a rear courtyard that would get fenced in. And I'll show you some of the elevations that kind of show what that looks like. That the back courtyard space would also get bisected as a portion for the residents. So the residents would come down and be able to have kind of outdoor courtyard space in the backyard. And then a smaller portion here would be, again, bisected as a portion of the of one of the commercial spaces downstairs. And I don't think our application in the agenda, it said two commercial spaces, one restaurant, one retail. It would actually be three total commercial spaces. So mm-hmm. on the, it would be bisected down the middle. The North 7th Street side would be restaurant, and then the front portion here would be a retail space. As you enter this existing doorway, it'd be kind of a vestibule with a hallway that leads back to a smaller retail space in the back. So front retail, rear retail, and that rear retail would encompass the portion of two-story building and the building addition off of the back, as well as the courtyard. So potentially a cafe, something again to be determined, but three distinct commercial spaces there. Two retail and a restaurant component. Dumpster enclosure, and I'll show you kind of what the, again, intent of the back courtyard area is. And if you're familiar with the Maker, as it was mentioned earlier, their back courtyard has that brick, lower portion of brick wall with fence above. The intent would be something similar here, where just a short knee wall, 2 foot knee wall of brick with fence above to be a total height of 6 feet. That would incorporated into that would be a dumpster enclosure. And then we've got six parking spaces in the rear, four of which would be for the residential. So one space per residential unit. And then two would be one allocated to the restaurant space and one allocated to the main retail space. So that's really kind of the only amount of parking that the site would be able to accommodate after the courtyard is built out.
So you're saying it's going to be three retail spaces instead of three?
Two retail spaces and a restaurant space. So three commercial spaces total, two of which would be retail, and then one would be the restaurant. Yep.
So three commercial. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And just some standard details. This is actually the fence enclosure, and you'll see on the elevations, this would just be this wooden fence portion of the dumpster enclosure here. So you just have full wooden fence screen there, and then this kind of double line that you see here would be the brick. The North 7th Street side and the tracks side would be brick with a more open kind of aluminum picket style so that you could see through. So it wouldn't be so, it wouldn't be a hard block there. There would be a hard bifurcation between the residential space and the restaurant, but you'd be able to see out onto 7th. And then same here, the residents would have a view out, as would this courtyard portion. And this is kind of that stub knee wall, just some of our standard details, wheel stops, and walking surface. So here are the elevations. Here's the upper is the existing, so shows the kind of existing windows, the existing entry door that goes up to the second story residential. And the previous uses, just to kind of give you a little background, the downstairs space most recently was just kind of storage, I think private storage. The second story, There was the radio station actually used it as an office. I think there was a residential space in that second story as well, and then the third floor had two residential spaces. The intent here would be to add a second set of doors on the North 7th Street side, again, to help as an entrance for the restaurant space, restore some of the windows. You can see here on this side of the building, the corbels and the soffit overhang has been either removed or no longer exists. And so the intent would be to restore that. There's this Bilco door, an overhead door that would go away, and the storefront glass would be, a new opening would be made in the masonry to create a storefront glass that wraps the corner. And then this shows that single story addition off of the back with the egress stair up to the rooftop decks. And then here's your rear elevation. So this is the existing, and I'll quickly pull this back so you can see there's that Bilco door and the overhead door. And then here's that kind of series of staircases that go up, and that's up to this level. So this would be the new nice back aesthetic, as if the courtyard fence wasn't there. So you'd have openings for the restaurant space, one for patrons, one for employees to come out into the courtyard. The egress stairs, it's kind of, again, deceiving because you see these in a row. It looks like one set of stairs, but you'd come up to this one, the deck, and then this would be on the back plane. And then storefront glass, essentially on the back retail portion that would come out to the courtyard. And then this is that tracks elevation, so you can see where right now currently the brick, the overhang, the soffit area with the corbels doesn't exist. They'd restore that back to the face of the chimney. And then this is just again that track side extension with the deck and the stairs that lead up.
Okay.
So happy to answer any questions. I'll just go back to the site plan to make it easier.
Any questions?
Yeah, I have just one question. It's great that you're going to have parking. I have to say that.
Thank you.
We don't confront that very often. Will there be any handicap spots there?
We're not proposing any handicap spots, mainly because the residential spaces won't be accessible, so we're not having an elevator. There won't be a lift, so none of the residential space will be ADA accessible. And then really the last two spaces are exclusively for the tenants, so the restaurant owner and the main retail space tenant. So really it's not for public consumption. Essentially, it's really just for the residents and the tenants.
Andy, that's permissible under the building code? I thought if you provided spots, you had to provide an ADA spot. But I'll leave it to you to work out with,
yep,
with Craig.
Yep.
Thanks.
Sure.
So we want to move to them establishing an escrow account.
So the first question for the board is, this requires site plan approval. Mm-hmm. And, you know, is this a significant change that you want to schedule a public hearing?
Yes, I do. How about the rest of the board?
Seems good. Yeah.
Sure.
And so we could do a motion to schedule a public hearing.
Can I get a motion to schedule a public hearing for 702-704?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, so we do that. And then we want to establish escrow for this one?
Yeah, if the board wants to establish escrow, now is the time to do it.
So will there be engineering review or legal review on this project?
Well, I mean, I'm here. I'm legal.
Do you need to review it, Victoria? It's pretty run of the mill. Okay.
You are adding another, you're going to add something to this building, right? Am I right?
Yeah. Okay. As far as the addition is concerned, okay. You mean? Yeah.
And you're going to bring us back plans that show color and a little better than that, right?
If you would like to see some, I think right now the applicant is still kind of deciding on color palette because we will have to go to HPC. Mm-hmm. Those elevations that you saw are actually submitted to HPC for their review. But I don't think she's fully vetted what the color palette is. I think we're down to two options, but yeah, as soon as we have some, we'll bring them.
Like something that looks
okay. We'll do. Okay.
So we want to establish escrow. Can I get a motion? Do I need a motion to establish escrow?
Motion. Yes.
Can I get a motion to establish escrow in the amount of?
I would say, you know, 1500 or 2000. This is just the time at the meetings.
Yes. Let's say 2000. We don't want to run out of money. No. Lawyers are expensive.
I'll make a motion, Teresa.
Okay, clock. And who seconds?
I'll second.
Okay, Gene seconds. All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And we make a motion to establish escrow of $2,000.
I just want to say I'm less expensive than engineers. But
oh, I don't know about that.
Okay.
Can you stop stirring for a moment, Andy?
Sure. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
So we need, Andy, we need the contact person for the, so the owner is not here. We need to know who's the contact person for the escrow because they have to send it in like tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to, you know, be going forward with this without getting escrow.
Sure. And that's just made out to the City of Hudson, correct?
City of Hudson, it goes to the clerk's office. Yeah.
Okay.
And I think, it goes to the treasurer's office, right? Or the clerk, either one. Yeah.
So I don't know if the board members want to go through their questions first or if you want me to walk everyone through the resolution we have prepared.
Okay.
One quick question.
Oh, sure. Let's go through the questions.
And sorry, Andy, I think you said it, but there is no current restaurant there right now, right?
Right.
So that's a plan. I'm just curious, like, has there been any modeling of like how we will increase traffic around that, but activity around that particular intersection? I'm just curious. I don't really have any concerns. I'm just curious.
Yeah, we haven't. I think it's one of those situations where you've got that kind of core of 5th Street, 6th Street, and now really kind of developing into 7th Street as being kind of auto-independent people coming up to the park and hopefully extending some of that kind of retail use where it's mostly foot traffic. So whatever shopping is happening, kind of pedestrian traffic that's going on there, you know, okay. The intent there is really just to have it be an extension of what's already taking place on Warren. And
and I'm just curious, has there, in that building, there's never been a restaurant, right? So this is the first time there's going to be introduction to a restaurant, right?
Yeah.
There was a restaurant in there.
Years and years ago, it was a tavern pub. Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
But
okay.
I think all of the, I don't think there's any remnants of that remaining.
There are two storefronts, right? Two storefronts are there now, right?
Well, it's kind of an extension. Let me go back to the frontage. There is basically an extension. And I'll do a screen share again real quick of this. So you can see the storefront kind of continues all the way across. So the intent would be to divide these spaces and construct a door here. Yeah, there's a partition wall here, mm-hmm. but it's really kind of one downstairs space. In years past, it was two separate uses. One side was again, it's gone through iterations. When we got the old Sanborn fire insurance maps, it was like, you know, tavern. I think they even called it saloon. So there were two spaces and then it was combined. So it's been through its iterations. But yeah, again, the intent would be to kind of reestablish those two separate uses there.
I've got a couple questions too, if I could chime in. It's also related to pedestrian activity, and I realize that area, since it's not currently heavily retailed, and there will be additional pedestrian traffic, it seems like looking at those intersections would be a very important And obviously it may not be you guys making interventions there, but it seems like we should be on top of what those intersections currently look like and safety, et cetera. So it does seem like the pedestrian issue is a big one. That's my first sort of comment. And then my second one is, do you plan on any exterior mechanical equipment? You'll be doing a restaurant and some new residential spaces. Is there any equipment? I guess I didn't see that in your plan.
Yeah, so the very rooftop, the third story rooftop, would be for the mechanicals. We don't have any mechanicals planned right now on the ground level, so they'd all be on the above that third story flat rooftop. We would the kind of vent hood for the restaurant space, because we've got an Ansel system and the hood's got to be 10 feet off the property line, so it's gonna take some doing to get the vent up through the old three-story portion to get it vented out the roof. Yep.
Right, but I'm assuming you guys are going to add that to your drawing so we can see that, right?
You want us to show the kind of boxes on the roof, like in plan view, you mean?
Sure.
Yeah. Sure. So right now, I mean, they're to the point of your point, Clark, and I guess I would want to know this sooner rather than later. You know, you've got Sitco, you've got the portion of, as you're moving up Columbia Street, you've got the pizza shop, you've got the Hess station there. Mm-hmm. There are crosswalks from the park on both sides of the tracks. I'm not really sure what you'd be seeking from a pedestrian movement perspective. Again, you've already got existing standing sidewalks, existing standing crosswalks. I don't know what that would add aside from another, retail / essentially commercial space there.
Yes, maybe just my sort of sense that I couldn't picture what the sidewalk crosswalk looked like in my mind. So maybe it's just my mistake or my lack of understanding. But it does seem like maybe you've already answered the question. There's sufficient there currently, but
just to give
you that stretch along there just seems kind of deadly. Because of lack of pedestrian infrastructure and fast traffic, et cetera.
So you've got the crosswalk from the park that comes across toward the Sitco. You've got this sidewalk portion, and then the crosswalk across the Columbia North 7th. And then this, this is, a fairly infrequently used road, North 7th, with good visibility down this line.
And you have an active train every day.
Which thankfully goes plenty slow.
It does.
It's also a state highway. Route 9, 23 beach.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you had trucks.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Oh, mechanicals. Okay, that was the other thing.
And you were here for the last applicant. And one of the things the public is very concerned about is the noise that the mechanicals make. So, please be very considerate when you're purchasing. And so I know that's an area, that's a traffic area of a lot of things going on, but people do live in that area also.
Sure. Yeah, and that's really, as we started looking at it, the original plan had a proposed deck up on the third story. And as we started looking at kind of the pros and cons of mechanicals on the ground, it was noise, it was space usage. It was like, let's get it up in the air, the furthest from pedestrians on the road. Yeah, exactly. Get it up on the roof.
Any more questions from the planning board for Mr. Andy? Public?
Okay. Are we in a position, Victoria, and you may already be going there, sorry, Teresa, to circulate for county.
All right, so good segue.
Oh.
For the board, we have a resolution prepared to classify the action and refer to the Columbia County Planning Board. So I think I need to make a change here.
Yeah.
I understood the project to be two commercial spaces.
It's gonna be three commercial spaces.
Yeah.
Sorry, I thought it was two also.
It's one here. One commercial space. Okay, to include a four unit, multiple dwelling units, as well as commercial restaurant and two commercial retail spaces. Mm. Okay, so tonight, this resolution would allow you to classify the project as a type two action under CECRA.
Mm-hmm.
And to refer it to the Columbia County Planning Board.
Okay. Should I get a motion? Can I get a motion?
I just had a question. Can I ask?
Sure.
Who's
that?
Who's that?
This is the one.
Juan. Okay.
Yeah. Is this a historic building or no?
I think
the applicant already indicated that they have to go to Historic Preservation Board.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, can I get a motion?
Motion. So motion, Bethany? Jean.
Okay, Jean, and second. You, Dustin?
Sure.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Andy. Now we can move on to the...
And I'm sorry, when we scheduled the public hearing, I just want to make sure, did we schedule it for the April meeting? Was there a vote on that?
No, we haven't scheduled it yet. Should be.
Okay.
Do you want
to
wait?
If you intend to do that, you should. You can do that now, or we can do it next month for the month after.
Well, I don't... Oh, what did the board... Do you want to schedule a public hearing? Now? Yeah. I guess so, why not, for next month. How about, can I get some thoughts on that? Okay, I want a motion to schedule a public hearing for 7:02
for April 12th.
For April 12th, for 7:02, 7:04, Columbia.
Not all at once.
Okay, maybe they didn't hear me. I'm sorry.
I thought we already.
No, we didn't. I have to get a motion for that, right?
Yes.
Okay. I'm asking for most.
Yeah, Teresa. No, I'm looking for information.
Okay.
Okay.
How much information are we going to require or are we requesting from the applicant, and correspond that information with a public hearing? Am I saying it right?
Eugene, you're asking how much new information is going to be submitted?
Was submitted, and is it going to be in a timely fashion to have a public hearing next month, or should we hold a public hearing off until all the information we're requesting is submitted by the applicant?
The only thing I asked them for is better renderings. Would it, we ask them for anything else?
Mechanical, well, to show mechanicals.
Mechanical, show your mechanicals and stuff, okay.
Mechanicals and the pedestrian traffic was mentioned. Parking is not really an issue. The handicap information, is this information going to be available prior to the public hearing, after the public hearing? Should we wait for a public hearing? You know, I'm trying to get everything together so we don't keep kicking the can down the road.
Mm-hmm.
We would submit, typically the submission deadline's, I think, 15 days prior, in which the notice goes out 10 days prior to the public notice, so all the information would be submitted to the city for the public consumption prior to the, you know, once they're noticed, the information would be there. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Am I wrong on my days, Victoria?
No, what I was going to say is we need to actually send the notice out prior to 10 days in order to get it published 10 days. But I understand were going with something different. Was that? The public would have it by the time they get this.
Okay. So do we feel comfortable with that?
I'm okay with that.
Can I get a motion for a public hearing? Thank you, Andy.
Thank you all.
Bye.
Thanks, Andy.
Okay, now we're going to go to 7 Dock Street. Site plan application from the owner, SEC LLC, to construct an addition of a new freezer storage building to their commercial space. Are you here?
I'm here.
Oh, you again. All right.
I'm here.
You're a busy one.
Yeah. Andy Didio with Taconic again for on behalf of Didier Emil for the White Toak storage site plan. And let me do a screen share. I'll do the same. I'll just kind of get right into the site plan. So 7 Dock Street, I think you're all probably familiar with it as Town and Country. The food preparation and distribution right across from the highway department.
Yes.
So I may as well do this. For those of you who may not, we'll just do the street side view again. Seems to be helpful. Dock Street. So Dock Street, here's your City of Hudson DPW building, the water plant. So here's the Town and Country site.
Right.
And right now there's an entrance that comes in on the northeast side that goes around to the back of the building. This is a combination of food preparation, retail space, as well as refrigerated storage. So they sell, you know, prepared foods, frozen. They're also kind of restaurant distribution, restaurant wholesale. And then that driveway continues around the backside. And they actually do also own this portion of gravel lot here. So I'll go back to the site plan so you can see kind of what the extent is here. There's that drive on the northwest side and then comes out to that gravel lot here in the existing building. So the proposed addition would be a roughly 10,000 square foot freezer space. So the use would remain the same. The retail component would be a little bit smaller. There's some reconfiguration that would happen on the interior of the building, more on an emphasis on the production of, you know, the meatballs and the sausage and that sort of thing and the packaging. The retail would get slightly smaller there, and then this is really for the storage and freezer prior to being loaded out. A portion of the back of the building here has an existing loading dock facility. We would ultimately modify that a little bit to create 3 separate loading docks for essentially different spaces and to just have additional capacity. Part of the plan would also include expanding the existing gravel lot so that, the larger, kind of the trucks would be able to turn around, because previously they'd be able to kind of pull in, nose in, and then circle around or back into the loading dock, which actually was kind of sideways. So now they'd be able to back in and then exit through the entrance. Parking along the frontage, kind of a more formalized parking. Right now everybody kind of still uses this side gravel lot as parking, but it would be more formal along the frontage of the proposed freezer addition, and that is as well as some additional parking in the back space here. So I think all in we end up with 8 parking spaces in the back and 14 out front for employees. And that's really essentially the gist of it.
So we're talking about not just an addition, we're talking about a extension, addition, and a reforming the way the parking lots and the dock. I thought it was just an addition building. Victoria?
Yeah, when we discussed this the other day, we didn't have the plans. And so we just went off the cover letter.
Right, and the cover letter doesn't say all of this.
There's not a whole lot of like actual building modifications that are going to happen to the exterior of the building. I'm sure some cleanup, but it's more kind of interior partition walls and how they utilize the space that would take place in the existing building. It's really the establishment of, with the exception of, you know, again, the reconfiguration, slight reconfiguration of the loading dock, it really is primarily just the addition of the freezer space. And the parking is existing. It's just, again, informal. It's a gravel lot, as you kind of saw. You know, they park all along here. Yeah.
Are you regrading, and are you doing stormwater management for the lot now that you're modifying it?
We are doing some grading here. You can see in the back here, because you know, we've got to ultimately be able to fit the building in. And part of our stormwater management is to, there's an existing stormwater culvert that comes along here. We've got an existing swale line that cuts across the back that routes there. We're just kind of, again, cleaning that up with the expansion of the parking lot. And then any of the roof leader runoff and any of that is, here's the existing catch basin. So there's existing stormwater infrastructure down on Dock Street. So we intend to tie into that. But our overall area of disturbance is less than an acre. So we don't reach the kind of SWIP threshold.
The planning board should discuss tonight whether you want to have an engineer, you know, take a look at this plan or not.
Well, I'm confused because the letter didn't say all of that. So I'm, you know, just, wow, it's more than just what that letter said.
Let me see, am I
right?
Well, I mean, right, it said expansion for a freezer, but it's an addition
for a freezer. It didn't say expansion, it didn't say nothing about the dock, it, you know, and he's talking about a lot of other things that I think needs to be written out clearly.
I think and I apologize for any confusion.
No, it's not you. It's the information that we received. It is not you. You're telling us what you're doing. But when we got the letter, it didn't tell us everything you were going to be presenting tonight. I mean, unless I misunderstood it. What do you say, Victoria?
Well, again, when we spoke, we didn't have the plans. So, For everyone on the board, Teresa and I had a phone conference or a Zoom conference last week to just review the status of all the applications. And so we didn't have these plans available at the time of that discussion.
Victoria?
Yes.
Yes. Hi, everybody. This is Craig.
Hey, Craig.
Hi. I'm assuming you're talking about the letter I sent you?
Yes.
Yes. That's just a letter saying why they're coming to the planning board. Their proposal is in the application. And it's very clear in there that they're expanding and an addition for a freezer to expand their business. The letter I give you is just to say why they're coming there. They're coming there for a site plan for the purpose of an addition based on the zoning code. Mm-hmm. So that's just the introduction letter that I give to you. That's really nothing. You have to look at their application, see what the application says.
Did you know about the they're going to change the dock?
Well, they're not going to change the dock. They're going to add to it with their addition. Yes, I did a whole review on this, and I don't know why nobody had the plans, because when I sent the letter in the application, the plans were with it.
So, yeah, I don't know what happened with the plans, but I think we had a review with them.
This is a typical commercial building that's looking to expand addition of a freezer, and whenever they're doing that, obviously they got to make more room for shipping, which is why they're expanding their dock. I mean, this is, I don't know why you keep referring to the letter, but that's just, I'm just giving you my input on it.
So the question is, do the changes in grading and the stormwater, does this rise to the level of needing an engineer to look at the plans?
based on, if you're asking me that, I would say no, because everything down there is already existing. It has an existing storm drain, it has an existing storm water drain, mm-hmm. has an existing grading, but obviously they're going to have to grade that within their property to keep it so it doesn't affect anybody else's property. I don't know if they would need, they're an engineering firm doing this, so I don't know why they need an engineer, but that's up to you folks.
Who's there? Who's down there with them?
What do you mean, who's down there with them?
Just across from them is the Department of...
You got Department of Public Works, and on the other side you have Craftech, which is a manufacturing company as well. That's it, and the sewer plant.
Yeah, and Teresa, just to clarify, there's an existing loading dock on the back of the building now.
Yes, I know. I've been there.
Yeah. So it's just basically cutting in new overhead doors. That's all that means. It's not, you know, establishing, you know, anything.
Okay. Yeah.
Thanks.
Glad you're here. You're back.
Thanks, Greg.
Finally.
Sorry, can you tell us where the storm drain is?
Sure. Am I still sharing? Yeah. So here you've got an existing catch basin. Oh, come on. You've got an existing catch basin here on the road frontage,
mm-hmm.
As well as there's a culvert that goes underneath the road right here. So mm-hmm. that's all that's taking. And you can see there's a diversion swale that comes down around the backside of the property now. And that is pretty much directed there, as well as sheet flow from the existing driveway and the existing building. We're just kind of, again, cleaning that up because you can see where that swale line goes now to accommodate. You can see somewhat the faint but dashed lines that show the turning radii of the trucks to show that, you know, the size trucks that would be shipping and receiving can make the swing, can pull in back into the dock. So we're just tuning that up to coincide with the expansion of the parking area.
So drainage isn't changing that much.
No, it's
pretty straightforward.
And you know, it's the survey has, and that's what you see, this gravel hatch there from the existing condition. Mm-hmm. That gravel area most likely extends all the way around here, but has grassed in. You know, when you look back into this area, it's all flat. They've got their dumpsters back there. It's probably one of those situations where it was gravel, you know, gravel at one point and didn't see a lot of traffic, especially they're putting their dumpsters back there. Oh, you're not looking at what I'm looking at. Back here.
Okay, thank you.
So that most likely is gravel. So even in a sense, to your point, Clark, is your, even your impervious surface isn't changing dramatically.
Okay.
I would say, based on what Andy just told us, I don't think we need an external third-party engineering review.
I agree.
Okay. I agree.
I mean, I guess in general, it's basically an industrial, a relatively modest expansion in an industrial zone, right? There's not neighbors. Residential neighbors, it's an area that's all industrial currently. Doesn't seem to have a huge amount of impact on anybody.
So the next issue would be, you know, is a public hearing needed? Because it's discretionary for site plan approval.
I don't see why, personally. I think it's pretty straightforward, and it's away from the public, mostly, you know.
I agree with John.
I agree as well. I don't think a public hearing is necessary.
I agree too. Do I have to go for a motion on that? No.
You need a motion to set it, but not to
set it. Okay. So far, four of us says no. How about you, Gene? No. You said no.
No, don't need it.
Dustin?
I agree.
Okay. So there'll be no public hearing. So what do we do?
Okay, so I have a resolution prepared for... Oh, Andy, can you stop sharing?
Oh, sorry.
Share screen. I have a resolution prepared for 7 Dock Street. It's not a type 2 action just because it exceeds 4,500 square feet. So mm-hmm. by virtue of it being 10,000 square feet, it's an unlisted action under CEPRA, which means you'll have to review part 2 of an EAF and complete it. So if there are no questions, you can make a motion to adopt the resolution.
Can I get a motion to adopt this resolution for 7 Dock Street?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Valerie. Valerie, second. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, so we have accepted the resolution for 7 Dock Street.
Okay, great. So, and the next question is, I mean, I don't have an approval resolution prepared tonight, but you could do it by motion if you wanted to go through part 2 of the EAF tonight.
Can I get a motion to go through part 2 of the EAF tonight? Or we can do it, when can we do it if we don't do it tonight?
At your next meeting.
Or we can do it at the next meeting. So can I get a motion to do it tonight? Okay, can I get a motion? Oh, Jean? Who's second? What? No? Nobody second this one? Okay. Can I second it? No, I can second it. Anybody? So nobody's in favor for tonight. In other words,
What does that entail? I'm sorry. I don't know.
Oh, you know, this will be the first seeker review for some of the board members. As part of the application, the applicant submitted what's called an environmental.
Okay.